Rabbi Goren writes, quote, I asked Mota if he could capture the city, and he said there would be no problem. Once the old city was surrounded on all sides, we would be able to break through the gates. We had an order, however, not to enter the old city. I told him he was letting the most important opportunity of his life slip through his fingers. You are being given the historic opportunity to liberate and capture Jerusalem and the Temple Mount, and you're not doing a thing? Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 230, The Shofar and the Scroll. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Rabbi Shlomo Goren would be, without question, the rabbi most associated with the June 7th return to ancient Jerusalem. And the sound of his shofar at that incredible moment would be enshrined in Jewish memory forever. But there is another ritual object that Rabbi Goren had with him throughout the war, one which has an incredible story all its own, one which is worth remembering as we describe the events leading up to the moment in time known today as the Day of Jerusalem. Like many members of the IDF, Rabbi Goren found himself on June 5th at the Egyptian front. But as we have mentioned in a previous episode, Rabbi Goren was certain that the series of events that brought about the war was setting the stage for the Jewish return to ancient Jerusalem. He tells us in his memoir that therefore, while he insisted on joining the members of the IDF entering the Sinai into battle, he still had Jerusalem very much on his mind. He also tells us that he took two objects with him as he went to war, a shofar and also a Sefer Torah, a Torah scroll. Quote, I asked the operations officer of the Southern Command to notify me when the war began on the Eastern Front so that I would have time to return to Jerusalem. I have to cross the lines with the first company that goes across, I told the 11th Brigade commander. He told me that he needed the Chief of Staff's confirmation. You don't need any confirmation, I replied. I'm going on the first troop carrier that crosses the lines. And that's exactly what I did. I took my Sefer Torah and a shofar with me. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the moment the troop carrier in which I was riding crossed the border, an artillery shell fell on us. We suffered a direct hit, and everyone in the troop carrier was injured except me. A piece of shrapnel struck the driver in the neck, and he began to bleed. I took out my pocket handkerchief and tied it around his neck. I did not even have a helmet to protect me. The shofar I had brought with me was burnt, as was my hat. We were about 50 yards from the Ali Muntar position, and the Egyptians were firing at us the whole time. I ran into the field and dragged the driver with me. I tied his neck tight and feared that he would die. A few minutes later, an ambulance came to take the wounded to the hospital. I told the ambulance personnel that I was staying in the field. There was a combat engineer with us who was wounded and was being evacuated, and I asked him to throw me his helmet. Thus, I was no longer in the carrier and was alone in the field with the Sefer Torah. One side of the field was a swath of ripe grain, and the other side was a field of thorns. The Egyptians fired at us incessantly, and fires broke out in the field. I was afraid for the Sefer Torah and for my life. I dug a deep depression in the ground so that I could protect my head and a deeper depression under my chest so that I could hold onto the Sefer Torah and lean on it. I was sure I would not get out of there alive, and I thought that if I reached the next world, I would be coming with a Sefer Torah in my arms. End quote. It is an unbelievable image, a rabbi enclosed in the soil clutching the holiest object in Jewish ritual life, holding the Torah tightly to himself. We have in the past reflected how the shofar, first sounded on Sinai, represents through its call the providential story of the Jewish people. But without question, it is the Torah that embodies the story of the Jewish people more than any other object in Judaism. There is a mystical tradition that every Jew is represented by one letter in the Torah, a tradition that builds on the law that only if every letter in the Torah is properly written is the scroll itself valid. As Rabbi Jonathan Sachs has noted, the meaning of this mystical tradition is that, quote, we have a choice. We can see life as a succession of moments spent like coins in return for pleasures of various kinds. Or we can see our life as though it were a letter of the alphabet. A letter on its own has no meaning, yet when letters are joined to others, they make a word. Words combine with others to make a sentence. Sentences connect to make a paragraph, and paragraphs join to make a story. That is how this tradition understood life. Every Jew is a letter. Every Jewish family is a word. Every community a sentence, and the Jewish people through time constitutes a story, the strangest and most moving story in the annals of mankind. End quote. This is very beautifully put. And it is, I think, what we are also asking, at least in part, when in our prayers we plead, Katchenu b'mitzvotecha v'tein chalkenu b'toratecha. Sanctify us, God, with your commandments, and give us our portion in your Torah. We are asking God's help so that we live up to the charge the Torah places on us, and that we take our place, the place designated for us, the role designated for us, in the larger tale of the Jewish people. It is therefore striking that Rabbi Goren was holding on to this Torah, thinking his life might come to an end, at a moment that Providence was actually setting the stage for him to take his place in the unfolding of a miraculous moment in Jewish history, when Rabbi Goren would experience the most famous moment of his life. Rabbi Goren tells us further, quote, "The bullets continued to whistle and shriek above my head, but none touched me. I began to say my prayers. I kept making my foxhole deeper, using the helmet to scoop out the soil, and soon I had a safe place for the Sefer Torah. As time went by, both sides of the field were burnt, and I was in the middle, in the section that was not cultivated and which was used as a road by the troop carrier. That's how I stayed alive. When the sun set, I came out with the Sefer Torah and crossed the border toward our side. When the soldiers saw me, they could not believe their eyes, and my driver hugged and kissed me. I went back to the command headquarters and asked the quartermaster to sell me an officer's hat. I gave him 10 liras, and he gave me a hat. At that point, I received word that the war for Jerusalem had begun, and that Hussein was attacking the Armon HaNetziv neighborhood in the southeast part of the city. I took my driver and the car that had brought me, and we drove back toward Jerusalem." End quote. Arriving back at Jerusalem, Rabbi Goren found Mata Gur at the Rockefeller Museum and urged him to do what, as we mentioned yesterday, Mata Gur dearly desired to do, enter the old city. Rabbi Goren writes, quote, "I asked Mata if he could capture the city, and he said there would be no problem. Once the old city was surrounded on all sides, we would be able to break through the gates. We had an order, however, not to enter the old city. I told him he was letting the most important opportunity of his life slip through his fingers. You are being given the historic opportunity to liberate and capture Jerusalem and the Temple Mount, and you're not doing a thing?" End quote. Rabbi Goren strongly argued that the moment was presenting itself to enter the old city, but his arguments were, in the moment, to no avail. Soon after, however, of course, Rabbi Goren would enter the old city with Mata Gur and his men, and he would take his Torah with him, as well as a shofar. We should recall how, as we described in an earlier episode, Rabbi Goren's original shofar had been gifted to him when a shofar maker was inspired by a dream to make a magnificent horn on behalf of the IDF's chief rabbi. Presumably, this was the shofar that Rabbi Goren had taken with him on the Egyptian front, the shofar that was destroyed when his transport was hit. In 1967, Rabbi Goren would have to rush to his father-in-law's home and borrow another shofar before entering the old city. We will, of course, have more to say about that shofar, but for now, let us credit also the man who allowed us to hear the sound of that shofar's call. Rabbi Goren tells us that, quote, "On my way from Rockefeller Museum to Lion's Gate, I met Yossi Ronan, a recorder for Army Radio, and he asked me for a ride. He had a tape recorder with him, and thanks to him, much of what happened that day was recorded," end quote. Thanks to that recording, the shofar of Rabbi Goren would become one of the most famous shofars in Jewish history, a shofar that would help define the religious experience in the moment. Much less focused on, however, is the other, more sacred ritual object that Rabbi Goren had with him, the Torah that he took with him from the beginning of the war. That Torah of Rabbi Goren would soon be taken atop the Temple Mount and would become the first Torah read in that sacred site in so many years, a Torah that truly embodied the Jewish story, that reflected how the story of the Jewish people is one unlike any other. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.